Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Up that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Mother have upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix, a suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, mother, you hope you're not ready.
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness. Ever since the Declaration of Independence, we've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they've fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome to another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon, and it's been way, way too long. It's been a long hiatus. I would say last time we did a show was at least a couple months ago, and that is about to end. We were going to continue to get back on track doing shows on a much more frequent basis, but please forgive us for not producing a program in some couple months because hecticness of life and myriad responsibilities and has kind of deviated us a little bit off track, but we're back on track now, and we will be back producing, you know, podcasts on a very regular basis. And we thank all the folks who have emailed and asked when the next show is going to be coming on, and if we were still, you know, still active as a show, and I'd say yes, without a doubt, Your World News is alive and well, and it's our faithful listeners and audience that are the lifeblood of Your World News, and so it's going to continue to press on. So without further ado, we have a very special program today, and next week we're going to have another very, very special program, so definitely be on the lookout for that. If you're listening online right now, just open a Blog Talk Radio account and then just sign up as a listener, and that way you'll always get you'll be inundated with the updates in terms of when the next program is going to be. You'll be sent a very simple, friendly reminder when the next Your World News program will be coming up, and so you'll know, and you can, you know, make time to listen live. But if you can't listen live, you can always listen on archive, because I know it's difficult for everyone to be tuned in at the same time, because, as I said before, sometimes life is hectic and we all have our different responsibilities, jobs, and so forth, and so this is why it's convenient, you know, in the podcast format, that you can listen to the show in its entirety on archive at your convenience. So today we're going to be addressing hip-hop, the often untold history of hip-hop. And some of you may know that, you know, I do a lot of work as an educator using hip-hop as a tool to really ameliorate and enhance education. I think hip-hop is a hip-hop culture itself is an incredibly powerful educational tool, and has been so since its inception, going back to the very early 70s. But as we know, and we'll delve into that, you know, graffiti art's inception even before that. But so I use hip-hop. I use a lot of progressive hip-hop, the kind of hip-hop that is quite frankly suppressed and marginalized purposely, methodically, by the U.S. corporate media. The U.S. corporate media is, I like to refer to, as the fourth branch of the U.S. government, because they work in lockstep with some of the U.S. government's machinations and so forth, you know, and they, you know, the U.S. government should be, I mean, the U.S. corporate media, or I should say media itself, should be independent, vastly independent, you know, because it's the tool that it should be used to inform to basically inform on a broad scale the masses. But the U.S. corporate media does not do that. They routinely inform the masses, the people that listen to them routinely, anyone that listens to them or watches them. They inform them with what they want them to listen to or to see or to know, and they suppress large chunks of information that they know exists, and they suppress that information because they want their viewers, their listeners, and so forth to think a certain way. It's manufacturing of consent, as you know. As folks like Noam Chomsky and Ed Herman had a book, you know, called the Manufacturing of Consent, and that's exactly what they do. They manufacture consent, and they want that consent to not go too far away from you know what the government wants people to think and to believe about a range of things. You know, it's not some kind of conspiracy theory or anything like that. It's real. It is real. We know this is real. From wars, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, we know that the likes of MSNBC, as well as Fox News, ABC, CNN, you know, they routinely, this came out a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, that they were routinely hiring former military generals and so forth, army generals, to come on their program. And they were basically serving as the mouthpiece for the Pentagon, and they would have them come out there, and they would put out whatever narrative that the Pentagon, the State Department, the White House were putting out there about the wars and basically cheerleading the wars, justifying the wars that, yes, there needs to be an expansion and so forth, and this war needs to happen because X, Y, and Z. And it was largely based on a bunch of out-and-out lies, L-I-E-S. Yes, they were based on a bunch of lies. But there was no, most importantly, there was no alternative narrative that was put out there. And we know that there were many, many alternative narratives by experts and political analysts and war analysts and so forth that had vastly alternative narratives. But these narratives were not put out there because these are the narratives that would have played a role in influencing the public's perception of the war, and they wanted the public by and large to support these wars, to not see them as imperialist wars, if you will, and to not see them as wars of plunder and exploitation, to not see them as wars that take a great many lives, that take more civilian lives than they do so-called enemy combatant lives. And we know, for instance, with the drone attacks, we know by the Stanford University and New York University study on the drones, we know that at least, 96 to 98% of the people that have been killed by U.S. drone attacks in places like Pakistan and Afghanistan have been innocent civilians, men, women, and yes, children. Yes, the most impressionable, the most vulnerable, children and elderly. But that's not much different with hip hop. So the hip hop that I deal with on a routine basis in terms of my educational workshops and so forth have to do with hip hop, especially rap music, rhythm and poetry. We'll get into that. Rhythm and poetry is what rap stands for. Rap music that has been suppressed, that is being suppressed. And using that as a point of departure to expound upon various lessons and to enhance critical thinking and to help folks, young and older, develop their critical thinking skills in terms of how to think, not what to think. Don't want to impose our will and to tell people what to think, but to be able to teach people to think and to teach people how to deconstruct dominant narratives that are fed to them, especially young people, dominant narratives that are fed to them. It's the most, most beautiful thing. And so that I do a range of things around hip hop, using hip hop to teach suppressed history, teach the history of indigenous people, Native Americans, if you will, to teach history of the African struggle, within the U.S., social issues such as white supremacy, institutional racism, sexism, you name it, things that these kind of isms that there needs to be a war on these isms to have these isms completely eradicated. You can't have a just society and have sexism, misogyny, or xenophobia or institutional racism exist in any shape, form, or fashion. They must be eradicated, and people must work together to eradicate these things, to create a culture that is based around peace and equality, social justice, and those type of things. And so I use that. Hip hop is a tool to address social justice issues, as I said, history, African history, Native American history, to social studies, if you will. You even touch on foreign policy. So I have workshops for all of these different areas. But I also have a workshop called The Often Untold History of Hip Hop, The Often Untold History of Hip Hop Culture, where I take workshop participants and the audience on a journey in terms of seeing what hip hop really is and where it came from. And then as the workshop continues to evolve and progress, then we get into the corporate media and why hip hop and so folks can see what it really is, and then to see why it's been turned into this kind of Frankenstein version in terms of what the corporate media only allows to be put out there, to see, you know, and to understand why the corporate media only allows a certain narrative, a certain mentally deleterious narrative, a very vicious narrative that they only allow to be put out there, and where they create the cookie cutter molds. So these molds of these rappers that are the mouthpiece of sexism and misogyny, senseless violence, capitalism, mindless, you know, consumerism. These are the narratives that they, quite frankly, feel most comfortable with. The narratives that are coming from rappers, and mainly black and Latino rappers, but we also know that there are white rappers out there that are as well that are speaking truth to so-called power. But it's these images and these narratives have a most nefarious effect on black and brown people, because it feeds into the already false stereotype that is out there right now of young black men, young black women, and so forth. And so this is why, you know, they will routinely give major, major platforms for the folks like Lil Wayne and Young Jeezy, Rick Ross, you know, 2 Chainz, Juicy J. I could go on and on, unfortunately. I could go on and on. But at the same time, they're suppressing some really powerful and I would say even more talented voices from being put out there, more talented voices, voices that are MCs, that are vastly talented, but they're also, you know, they're also discussing a range of issues within their music that routinely is suppressed. You know, the likes of Dead Prez, Jesseri X, Invincible, Brother Ali, Mr. Liv, Acrobatic, Mos Def. I mean, even the Mos Def has been suppressed, has been marginalized. So these are examples of just a few of the rappers that are routinely, and their music that's routinely suppressed because they don't want their narratives to be out there. So they have no problem putting out rappers that feed into, that are modern day minstrel shows, modern living, breathing modern day minstrel shows that mimic some very, very violent lyrics, you know, some lyrics that contribute to a rape culture in the society. They have no problem with that, no problem whatsoever, because ultimately that it's at the expense of the black and brown human being in the United States of America. It's at the expense. And so as long as it's at the expense of that community and they can make literally billions of dollars off of this music, that is exactly what they do. And so we will get into that. So this workshop, the Often Told Untold History of Hip Hop, gets into all of that. It gets into all of that. And so, you know, I just wanted to do something for the listeners to kind of let them into a bit of the work that I do. I've been, you know, really fortunate to go all over the U.S. and to do myriad workshops, throughout the U.S. and also, you know, internationally as well. I've been to places like Norway to do these kind of workshops. And regardless of what the age group is, I cater it. I don't water down the information, but I cater it, the message, you know, to most palatable level for the age group that I do, but most of the workshops I do are, you know, with college age students, young people, and so forth. But I do, you know, a range of educational workshops, you know, getting young people, very young people, middle school age kids as well, to become more enthusiastic about the pursuit of knowledge and information, because you can't push education on somebody until they become a lover of education, and until they become a lover of knowledge and pursuing knowledge and wisdom. Once they fall in love with learning to expand their knowledge, then it makes it a little bit easier to push, you know, the whole notion of education. And we surely know there's a lot of a lot of room for improvement within the U.S. educational system, and to move away from this rote, you know, pedantic, you know, one size fits all educational mold that we see in today's school systems. And how kids are taught, and there's a lot of good teachers out there that are trying to, you know, do what they can, but they're stuck in this mold because the mandate tells them that, you know, you must teach to the test. And we have this nefarious charter school, you know, scheme that is, you know, to corporatize as many schools as possible, mostly in black and brown poor communities. So without further ado, this is the often untold history of hip hop. And so I'd like to start off by just saying, you know, what hip hop culture means to me, it means resistance, it means community, it means innovation, it means beats and fellowship. It's good times, it's activism, it's education, it's knowledge, it's life. All these things are what hip hop mean to me and so much more. And it's been this way, and this is what hip hop meant to me since I was a kid. And I'm sorry for actually even being remiss and not letting you know my website, you know, should you want to visit my website, it's just solomonkamajan.com, and that's www.solomonkamajan.com. That's solomonkamajan.com. One more time, that's www.solomonkamajan.com. You can go there and you can check out my website and you know, see some of the work that I do. And there's also some pretty good information on there as well. And there's also some videos of some past workshops that I've done. So hip-hop has meant all these things to me since I was very, very young. I would say age 10, 11, and 12. Since I came to the U.S. From the island nation of Trinidad, hip-hop is something that embraced me, and I equally embraced it. And it spoke volumes to me and legions of other youth, you know, throughout the U.S. It spoke to us in a way that that we weren't being spoken to by anyone. I mean, you know, even though, you know, you may have, you know, really great parents, you know, telling you, you know, certain lessons, and you, if you're smart, you listen, you know, but hip hop was took it to another level. They were telling us, you know, things in a very rhythmic way. It was, and as we know, rap music is rhythm and poetry, as I said before. And the way they spoke to us, it was like they were speaking right to us, and they addressed various issues that we saw right in front of our face. And it just kind of opened up our mind's eye. It opened up that third eye, your mind's eye, to, you know, your consciousness to be cognizant of things that are going around in your community and within the country that you live in and in the broader world. It brought us into a world of looking at history, being told about African history. At the same time, your school system starts with the teaching of African history with chattel slavery, which is vastly important. You know, the history of the African Holocaust must be taught. Yes, it must be taught. The same way the children of Jewish parents, their parents and the communities tell them never forget, never forget. The children of black parents, of parents of African ancestry, they must teach their kids, you must never forget, you must know this as well. However, our history doesn't start with that. Our history, you know, African people's history starts thousands of years before that. And it's a very, very brilliant and beautiful history before that, a history that has contributed to, the development of the world in many, 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 many ways, just like people from other parts of the world have contributed to the development of the world in many ways. However, the history of African people, of black people, has continued to be suppressed in so, so many ways. And so these were stories that were told to us within songs that that I can tell you as a young man, you know, growing up in the mid-80s, I mean, you couldn't tell me that there was anything wrong with the skin that I wore. You couldn't tell me there was anything wrong with being a black man or a black boy. There was nothing whatsoever. I held my head high because I was basically embracing the stories and the lessons that were being told to me by my favorite rappers. I was embracing the fact that they wore, African medallions that were, you know, encrusted in a little leather, circle, and were attached by a black rope. And you wore that. You carried your head high because you had just listened to a song by KRS-One called "Why Is That?" where he broke down. You know, he broke down, you know, African history, you learned about Imhotep. You learned about the world's first physician. So regardless of the fact that the Western world was telling you that medicine and started with the Europeans, started with the Greeks, started with Hippocrates, we were learning that Imhotep, not in school, but we were learning from Afros that Imhotep, who predated him, you know, who predated Hippocrates, the Greek, you know, physician. Imhotep predated him by several hundreds of years. As a matter of fact, some of Hippocrates' work is predicated off of Imhotep's work. So why is it that doctors, when they become a doctor, they have to take the Hippocratic oath? I mean, they should really be taking the Imhotepan oath. But in the Western world, it puts the European, it puts people that are white, it puts them at the center of the world, and that's why we call certain things, even on the globe, this is the Middle East, or this is the Far East, and this is the, you know, because they put Europe at the center of the world. As we know, the globe, the world is round. So literally, you could have said, you know, Africa was the center of the world, or you could have said, you know, Asia was the center of it, but they said, no, Europe is going to be the center of the world. And all things European, that is where things start with. That is, you know, and therein lies, that is an example, that is a blatant example of white supremacy in and of itself. And everybody else that is not white, you know, your history will be touched on a little bit here and there, but not on any kind of significant level as that of European history, of white history. And so hip hop gave all this to me, all the aforementioned, as I said before, the education that I got from hip hop was second to none. And my political education, really, you know, I really became activist oriented. I became, my politics became very revolutionary oriented, even at a very young age, being 14 and 15 years of age as we transitioned, when I became introduced to a group by the name of Public Enemy, a group out of Long Island, New York, you know, maybe some folks have heard of Public Enemy. I'm sure people have heard of Public Enemy, even though they may not be as familiar with their music as I and many, many others are. But growing up and listening to the likes of Chuck D, who was the front man for Public Enemy, and listening to songs like Black Steel and the Hour of Chaos, really, I mean, revolutionized the way that we young people, you know, especially young people of color, looked at these political issues and so forth. It instilled us an aura of confidence that is just completely invaluable in and of itself. And so, being introduced to Public Enemy, first they had an album called Yo Bummer's the Show, and then they upped the ante with It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, which I would say was their seminal album. And in that album, the name drop, the corporate name drop now that's associated with hip hop, you know, where they name drop, you know, these corporations, most of like these large corporations, whether it's Nike or Adidas or Cristal or this, that, and the other, whether it's a liquor or clothing apparel. The name drop in the golden era was a little bit different. I'm being euphemistic when I say a little bit. It was a lot different. So the name drop, you know, in that album, you know, the names of Winnie Mandela and the names of Steve Biko. These are the names that were being dropped. They even played a sample of the great Ivan Van Sertima. I mean, there was a part in that album where you know, Flavor Flav says, you know, picture us cooling it out on the 4th of July. And if you heard we were celebrating, that's a worldwide lie. That was a moment as a young person, that the first time that I really challenged the narrative of, I was pushed to challenge the narrative of the 4th of July. The 4th of July is a celebration of what? What is the 4th of July a celebration? It's a celebration of a particular moment in history, 1776, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, you know. But that celebration was not for everybody. There were Native Americans. There were enslaved Africans who America at that time was very, very cruel to. The white supremacist nature of America at that time, by the legs of George Washington, who was an owner of African slaves. He held African slaves against their will, over 300 of them. You know, so that whole thing, you know, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, you know, all men are created equal, that's complete BS, because they didn't mean that for Native Americans. They didn't need that. They didn't mean that for enslaved Africans, the Africans that they were enslaving and oppressing actively at that time, at 1776. So no, I'm not going to celebrate the 4th of July. So I, at that moment in time, I said, no, I'm not going to celebrate this 4th of July. I wasn't thinking about it before that, but it put things in perspective. Why should I celebrate a holiday that my ancestors, and even if I wasn't a black man, if I'm just a humanitarian, a person that loves human beings, why would I celebrate anybody? Why would I celebrate a holiday that at the same time is a most hypocritical holiday, a holiday that continues, suppressed the rights and the interests of a portion of the population within the U.S. And that was African people, that was also Native Americans who were being oppressed at that time. So this is one of the songs, I would say the song that really, I would say, opened up my nose in a lot of ways. And so this was that song, and it's called Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos. And I want to play the songs for you, and then we're going to come back and we're going to hit the ground running. But I just want you to step into the kind of, just transfix yourself to being a 14 or 15-year-old boy or girl, being somebody who is of color, and you hear this song for the very first time. You hear this song, and tell me what kind of impact you believe this would have on you. All right? And it shouldn't be hard, because we see the impact the music that is promoted and played now on the corporate media, you know, the Juicy J's, you know, and the 2 Chainz birthday songs. I mean, songs that just embrace a rape culture, embrace, you know, male supremacy, embrace misogyny and sexism, you know, and how that impacts youth today. Now, imagine youth that, exchange those messages, those images, for this song and the images that came from this image, this song. You can YouTube the video, actually, and you can see how powerful the video was that accompanied this song. So here's, without further ado, Public Enemy in the Hour of Chaos, Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos.
Thanks for your face, London. Everybody in the house, make some noise. I want everybody in the house to say, ho! Yo, Chuck, kick it to him, man.
A ballad behind bars, or you could say real rock from the rock. An unusual musical happening in a most unusual place. The state prison.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it. It said they were suckers. They wanted me for their army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn. I said never. Here is a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me and myself, because they never did. I wasn't with it, but just that very minute it occurred to me the suckers had authority. Cold sweating as I dwell in my cell. How long has it been? They got me sitting in a state pen. I gotta get out, but that thought was thought before. I contemplated a plan on the cell floor. I'm not a fugitive on the run, but a brother like me's begun to be another one. Tell the enemy serving time, they drew the line, y'all. They criticize me for some crime. Nevertheless, they could not understand that I'm a black man and I can never be a veteran. On the script, the situation's unreal. I got a raw deal, so I'm looking for the steal. Word them up. I'm looking for that steal.
Yo, man, we gonna break you out of there, man. We ain't gonna like that, man.
Don't you know they got me rotten in the time that I'm serving? Telling you what happened the same time they're throwing. Four of us packed in a cell like slaves. Oh, well, the same motherfucker got us living in his hell. You have to realize what is the form of slavery organized under a swarm of devils. Straight up, word them up on the level. The reasons are several, most of them federal.
Yeah.
Here's my plan anyway, and I say I got gusto, but only some I can trust. Yo, some do a bit from 1 to 10, but I never did, and plus I never been. I'm on a tier with no tears should ever fall. Cell blocked and locked, I never clock it, y'all. Cause time and time again, time they got me serving to those of them. I'm not a citizen, but ever when I catch the CO, sleeping on the job, my plan is on go ahead. I want the strength, I'ma tell you the deal. I got nothing to lose, cause I'm going for the steal.
Yo, Chuck, we gonna break you out of here, man. Word of strength, G.
I'm going for that steal.
Word up, G. They're trying to put black out of the gate by keeping you in there, you know what I'm saying? But they can't keep a good man down.
Got it. Got me in the cell.
Hey, yo, Chuck, we got
it.
Y'all ain't gonna stop me, baby.
Got it. Got me in the cell. And every man's a man got served, along with the time they served, decency well deserved. To understand my demands, I gave a warning. I wanted the governor, y'all, and plus the warden to know that I was innocent. Because I'm militant, posing a threat, you better fucking up the government. My plan said I had to get out and break north. Just like Oliver's neck, I had to get off. My boys had the feds in check, they couldn't try nothing. We had a force to instigate a prison riot. This what it takes for peace, so I just took a piece. Black for black, it's my time to cut the leash. Freedom to get out to the ghetto, no sellouts. 60 O's we got, we ought to put their head out. But I'll give them a chance, cause I'm civilized. As for rest of the world, they can't realize a cell is hell. I'm a rebel, so I rebel. Between bars got me thinking like an animal. Got a woman CO to call me a copter. She tried to get away, and I popped her twice, right? Now I wanna get nice. I had 60 O's, and now it's 5 to go, and I'm serious. Call me delirious, but I'm still a captive. I gotta wrap this time to break as time grows intense. I got my steel in my right hand, now I'm looking for the fence.
Hey, yo, Chuck, we got the dope plan in effect. G, word to the strength, man.
I'm looking for that fence.
Word, I got the 98 by the seat. Professor Griffin, S1. Yo, Chuck, we coming, man.
As I ventured into the courtyard, followed by 52 brothers bruised, battered and scarred, but hard. Going out with a bang, ready to bang out. The power from the sky, from the tower, shots rang out. A high number is dose, yes, it's something close. I figure I trigger my steel stand and hold my post. This is what I mean, an anti-nigga machine. If I come out alive, then they won't come clean. Then I threw up, my steel bullet flew up. And to my surprise, the wall and tower blew up. Who shot what, who, what, the bazooka was who? And to my rescue, it was a S1W. Secure my getaway, so I just got away. The joint broke from the black smoke. Then they thought it was rougher than the average fluffer. Cause the steel was black, the attitude exact. Now the chase is on, telling you to come on. 53 brothers on the run, and we are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was Public Enemy. And so you see what I'm saying. You listen to that song, and it takes you on a journey. It takes you on a journey, and it presents you with perspectives and narratives that are not readily available, or I should say not promoted by the mainstream within the United States. And you can see why not. I mean, he addresses a range of things. He addresses the contradictions that he believes as a black man that come with serving in the U.S. military. I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it. It said they were suckers. They wanted me for the army or whatever. Picture me giving a damn. I said, never. Here is a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me. And so you think about that. Exactly. So why would, you know, Chuck D saying, why would I consider serving in this military? You know, beyond the fact that the military, you know, the U.S. military routinely operates as an imperialist one. It doesn't fight wars of defense. It primarily fights wars of aggression, of imperialism. Iraq, Afghanistan, the drone war in Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen. Libya. I mean, these are all wars of aggression. They were largely based on lies, whether it was Libya or Iraq, and they serve the interests of, you know, the military industrial complex. So it gets back to that whole capitalist, you know, corporate entities that it's primarily serves the interests of. And so, but beyond that, Chuck D's saying this is a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me. So he's saying that, you know, what he's essentially saying is that this country has always, since African, you know, Africans were stolen from the continent of Africa and brought to what is now known as the United States, have been brutalized, have been oppressed. And so he's like, hell no, I'm not going to serve in this army or whatever. There's no way. I am not going to serve in this army. But and so that's the complete opposite narrative. You see how Hollywood and the commercials that are routinely, you see them in between timeouts and NBA games, football games, you see this hyper militarized culture, you know, this military day, you know, at a football game or at a baseball game, you know, they have, and the military today, as we know, preys upon young people whose socioeconomic backdrop of their lives is one that is, you know, entrenched in poverty. And so it preys on their socioeconomic status, you know, as a tool to kind of lure them to definitively lure them into the military. Like, hey, this is your way of getting out. We'll give you an education. We'll give you, you know, the GI Bill and this. And that's not even entirely true, because oftentimes, I think the stat is, I think it's about 53% of the time, folks that receive, you know, 53% of the people that, that go into the military actually get, you know, funding for college. In most cases, the money that they get for the GI, the money that they get, you know, that's supposed to go towards, college or some kind of tertiary education is not even enough to pay, you know, half of one year's tuition at most colleges or universities in the U.S., you know, and we know that there's over $1 trillion right now in the year 2013, over $1 trillion of student loan debt that is floating out there, right? The high cost of college education. And so they're not entirely telling you the truth, and you know, you have to serve for 12 months before you start to receive benefits towards your so-called college education down the line. The first 12 months, you actually, when you go into the military, you actually have to pay in $100 a month from your stipend, you know. And so, but I would say even deeper than that. I mean, he's saying I'm not going to serve in this military. I'm not going to serve in this military. I am not going to serve in this military. And so that song really, really, I mean, you know, what else is he talking about in that song? This is 1989, the song comes out. Also, you know, you could say he's talking about political prisoners. I mean, he himself is a political prisoner, right? So he's a political prisoner. And as we know, no matter what narrative that the U.S. government wants to put out there, or the mainstream media wants to put out there, you know, trying to lecture other countries about their political prisoners. You know, the U.S. continues to hold, innumerable human beings, living, breathing human beings who have been held political prisoners, you know, for literally decades, whether it's Marshall Eddie Conway, Chip Fitzgerald, I mean, the former Black Panther Party members in Louisiana that you know, are held in Angola's prison, they've been held in solitary confinement, you know, for 3 decades, Mumia Abu-Jamal. I mean, so these are folks who, you know, by and large have been held as political prisoners based on their resistance to a very hostile climate in the 60s and 70s. We're talking about COINTEL, the counterintelligence program that came from the U.S. government by way of the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover that targeted Black and Latino and Native American and even, you know, white political dissenters. But it mostly impacted in the most harsh way, you know, activists, you know, of color, you know, whether it was Native Americans or, you know, or African Americans who were resisting, the targeted assassinations that came by way of various police departments throughout the U.S. as well as the FBI. And so it's just, you know, they are, you know, in no shape, form, or fashion. They are no shape or fashion anything but political prisoners. They are political prisoners. They have stories. They are political prisoners. And so Chuck D is himself in the song. His character is a political prisoner. He takes you on that journey. He also addressed the prison industrial complex. And this was before the prison industrial complex became the booming prison industrial complex that we know to be today in the 2013, where, you know, about 2.5 million people are being held in the United States' prison system. That's more prisoners than any other country in the world, and that includes China. So the U.S. holds more prisoners today in 2013 than any other country in the world. All right. And by percentage-wise and by share number, by per capita. The U.S. also has, you know, this robust prison industrial complex where the building of prisons is a profit-making one. And so it's not just private prisons, but even so-called federal or state prisons, I should say, state prisons, you know, are profit-making apparatuses, you know. And so for instance, the state of Maryland has the Maryland Correctional Enterprise. You can Google that, Maryland Correctional Enterprise, and you can see all the products that they sell there. This is a state prison, a state prison system where they make, you know, furniture and all kinds of things, you know, and they sell those kind of things. And routinely they make it, you know, 48, 49. A couple of years ago they made over $50 million in one calendar year, one fiscal year, I should say, by selling their products that are being made by prisoners. So he addresses all of that stuff. And so these you can see how this song can really politicize a young person. And I think that's an outstanding thing, because you don't want these people to just go through this. You know, children, you know, and young people need to be taught how to think independently, how to question certain things that come across their path, and to democratically, you know, expose them to information. These are the things that, because if these questions are not coming up, why are so many people, and why are so many people of color behind bars? Why are so many people, why are so many, you know, so-called African-Americans, Black people that are incarcerated? You know, if we represent, if African-Americans represent 13% of the overall population in the United States, why do they represent close to 50% of the prison system? Why is that? You know what I'm saying? So people are taught not to even think about these questions because they're held far, far away from their mind's eye. They're held very far away from their mind's eye. They're not supposed to think out of sight, out of mind. And if it is brought up, then you know, we're gonna sell incarceration as a good thing. You know, lock them up. They did the time. You did the crime. You do the time. You know, and so it begs the question: why is that? Why if African Americans and European Americans use cocaine basically at the same rate, why do African Americans represent upwards of 60-70% of all new convictions? Why is that? It's because their communities are hyper policed. They're excessively policed, and they are policed because their communities are in a perpetual police state. That's a part of the oppression. That's part of the institutional racism apparatus that is woven throughout America. And rappers and MCs were bringing this up. Hip hop was bringing this up because the media wasn't. You know, and that's why some MCs from the Jam Master Jay, rest in peace, you know, said this was our CNN. Hip hop was our CNN. It was our CNN. And today, it serves as that. However, the voices that are projecting these important narratives and this important information have been largely suppressed. And so these young people that are running around listening to Lil Wayne and Young Jeezy and 2 Chainz, it's because they're listening to that, you know, because they don't know that there are alternative voices out there. Those voices have been suppressed. And so when we look at, for instance, the Underground Railroad, and we know of Harriet Tubman and so forth, it wasn't literally like underground. I mean, it's underground is a reference to that it was being suppressed by the dominant hegemony. So you have this term today that did not exist when I was a young boy, called the underground rapper, the underground MC. Well, these folks are called underground. They're not rapping underneath the ground. They're not rapping underneath, under the water or anything like that. They're called underground MCs or underground rappers. It's underground hip hop because their messages are being suppressed by the dominant hegemony that controls America, the finance capital, these largely white corporations that control the airways, and so that's just a snippet. But I get into this within my workshops and so forth. But you know what? I have to tell you, there are a lot of brothers and sisters out there that are doing some amazing work with hip hop. I'm not the only one that's doing work with. There's a lot of folks out there that are doing some really, really incredible work around hip hop, and my hats go off to all of them. I consider them comrades, because it's important. You know, those of us that have this information that know the true story of hip hop, that know how and why things became shaped the way they are now, who is being suppressed, why certain messages are being suppressed. That is our job to get that information out to as many as we can, not just each one teach one, each one teach 10, each one teach a dozen, each one teach 100 if you can, and teach as many as you can. Give that information away. And that includes whoever's listening to this right now for the first time that's embarking upon this information. Send this podcast and sit down and listen to it with the young people. And then stop it and put your own signature on it. That's fine. You know, stop it and give your own input in terms of and show examples of what is being discussed in this podcast. You know, that's what we got to do. We got to collaborate. And we got to build this thing together. We got to try to build a better society together by tackling these issues. You know, and you can't tackle any issues without folks being supremely, educated, or at the very least educated on a rudimentary level, regarding many, many issues. So hip-hop is not a musical genre. Hip-hop is a culture. Rap is something you do. As hip-hop, as KRS-One said, rap is something you do. Hip-hop is something that you live, right? Rap is something you do. Hip-hop is something you live. Hip-hop is a culture, and within that culture are various elements such as b-boying and b-girling, otherwise known as breakdancing, DJing, rapping, graffiti, beatboxing, knowledge of self, knowledge of your community. That's a key element, knowledge of self, knowledge of community, urban jargon, urban entrepreneurism, urban fashion. These are all elements of hip-hop culture. Matter of fact, the founding principles of hip-hop culture. Our peace, love, unity, having fun. Nah, Viacom does not push that. I try to stay away from referring to simply BET or VH1 or MTV as, you know, as that, because they're owned by Viacom. Viacom owns, you know, owns those media outlets. You know, BET is not black owned in any shape, form, or fashion. But they're not telling you this. They're not telling you hip hop is peace, love, unity, and having fun. No, because that would be a direct contradiction. If that's the case, why do you only show these videos by artists, or predominantly show videos by artists whose lyrics embrace the completely antithesis of peace, love, unity, and having fun. So that is what hip hop is, and I just want to play this song. It's called Nine Elements by KRS-One. If there's an issue out there, if there's a story to be told, you know, most likely an MC has addressed it. And this is called Nine Elements by KRS-One. Listen closely. He's going to tell you about hip hop. He's going to tell you about the nine elements.
Right now, ladies and gentlemen.
This is a rap session, and my name is Orison Boyd. And when I talk about hip hop music, I know.
One. Breaking or break dancing, really b-boying, freestyle street dancing. Two, MCing or rap, divine speech, what I'm doing right now, no act. Three, graffiti art or burning, bombing, tagging, writing, now you're learning. Four, DJing, we ain't playing. You know what I'm saying? Five, beatboxing, give me a. Yes, and we rockin'. Six, street fashion, looking fly, catching the eye while them cats walk on by. Seven, street language, our verbal communication, our codes throughout the nation. Eight, street knowledge, common sense, the wisdom of the elders from way back whence. Nine, street entrepreneurialism, no job, just get up, call them and get them. Here's how I'm telling it, all nine elements. We stand in love, no, we never fell in it. Intelligent, no doubt. Hip-hop, we not selling it out, we just letting it out. If you're checking us out this hour, we teaching hip-hop. Holy integrated people have it, I'm the present power.
Hip-hop is something you do, hip-hop is something you live. Hip-hop is something you live, hip-hop is something you live. Rap is something you do, hip-hop is something you live.
Skaters, BMX bike riders, rock. Don't you ever stop, you are hip-hop. You doing the same things we did on our block in the suburbs. You know you be packing that black block, selling that crack rock and ecstasy. Can you see drunk falling out next to me? But like I tell those in the ghettos, here's the fact. True hip-hop is so much more than that. So much more than rap, so much more than beat. Hip-hop is all about victory over the streets. What you see on TV is a lie. That's not something you wanna live or pattern your life by. That's too much preaching, ain't it? You don't want the edutainment, you wanna be dead on the pavement. Well, so be it, some of y'all ain't gonna see it. Others wanna enslave your mind, Chris wanna free it.
Rap is something you do, hip-hop is something you live. Hip-hop is something you live, hip-hop is something you live. Hip-hop is something you live, there's differences. Hip-hop is something you live.
You know, that's why these rappers can't hang. Cause the essence of hip-hop is not a material thing. They so careless, hip-hop is an awareness we give. Rap we do, hip-hop we live. How many times I gotta say it? How long the radio ain't gonna play it? And you hip-hoppers sit back and okay it. Think about it. The present course of action, we have got to reroute it.
Hip-hop is something you live. Hip-hop is something you live.
Yeah, that was KRS-One, the nine elements. As he said, rap is something you do, hip-hop is something you live. I mean, he broke down the nine elements, you know, broke down the nine elements and took it a step further. And so, like I said before, this is, you know, this broadcast right here, the folks that control the major corporations, the ones that love to embrace and promote the stereotypical images of black and brown men and women, they're the ones. This is their worst nightmare. This is their worst nightmare. People that are actually putting out a completely opposite narrative of what hip hop really is. People that are actually putting out the truth about what hip hop is, and then breaking it down for folks to let them know why they've never known about this side of hip hop. Breaking down the nefarious, you know, corporate tentacles that took hip hop and reshaped, you know, took their little silly putty and reshaped it into something that it's not, and sold it to the most impressionable, those that were not privy to the truth of what's really going on, and sold it, something to them, to the point that they believe that hip hop is about drugs and about sexual gratification, and it's about senseless violence, and it's about, you know, that, you know, that's what they want to sell hip hop. That's what they want it to be. They want to recreate that reality. They want to manufacture. And engineer, you know, consent. You know what I'm saying? They want to create their own version of what hip hop is. You know, matter of fact, and as I referenced that, you should definitely read that book by Manufacturing of Consent by Noam Chomsky and Ed Herman, and, you know, really gets into the media. It doesn't talk about hip hop, but it gets into the media. It gets in, talks about, you know, Walter Lippmann, you know, who he was, and Ed Bernays. These are you know, folks that you know were hired guns by the elites, you know, to manipulate, you know, the media and information and public relations and to serve the interest not just the corporations but also to serve the interests of the government. The whole thing, the whole support our troops, you know, slogan comes out of something that Ed Bernays was a part of, the Creel Commission, you know. Creel, C-R-E-E-L, you know, commission or committee. So, anyways, this is their worst nightmare. They don't want this narrative being put out there. They don't want this information being put out there. And that's why we got to all come together. We got to put this information out ourselves within our communities. You know, have these conversations with young people. You know, at after school programs. Do it with your nieces, your nephews, you know, your children, you know, kids in the neighborhood. You know, be sitting outside on the stoop and tell them the truth. Tell them how their minds are being manipulated in the interest of some corporations that couldn't give a damn about them or their community. So as we move forward, hip hop. I basically have hip hop broken down into three different stages: the early '70s, you know, which is, you know, a beginning and an outlet for urban youth that were being marginalized, and it provides a voice for these urban youth in places like Philadelphia, New York, you know, whether it was by way of graffiti art or b-boying, b-girling, you know, or even, you know, even rapping, you know, it was an outlet for urban youth. And then there was the golden era, and I would say I have that around like circa 1985, 86 to circa 1994, 95, 96, you know, definitely, you know, endings for sure, 1996, with the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that completely deregulated, you know, the media in terms of ownership of things like radio and the Telecom Act within like two to three years decreased black ownership of radio by about 70%. So another good book that you can read if you want to get some more information about the media is The Media Monopoly. You definitely read that book by Bob McKesney. There's just a range. Before the end of the show, I'll kind of give some more books and literature that folks can really kind of sink their teeth into if they want to get, because you can't talk about hip hop without talking about the media. The media it's vastly important to talk about the media in relationship to hip hop culture and where it's come from and how it's evolved to what it is now. And I correct myself. The Media Monopoly is written by Ben Bagdakian. Bagdakian, Bagdikian. But you can just Google the Media Monopoly, and the new Media Monopoly, or you can just Google Media Monopoly. It will still come up. The new Media Monopoly is the actual name, but you can just type in the Media Monopoly, and it'll come up. And that's a very, very good book. But then there is also a book by Bob McChesney, that is on the media, and the name of that book kind of eludes me at this very, very moment. But it's the Problem with the Media. The Problem with the Media. And that's by Robert McChesney. The Problem with the Media. That's a tremendous, tremendous book. Tremendous, tremendous book to get some further insight on the media. And there's, you know, there's like a ton of books, but you know, those two can really give you a good footing. But there's a ton of books. But if you're not really familiar with the media, I mean, I would start with either one of those. So we move from the golden era of hip hop, where within that there's a heightened consciousness in rap music, where more and more MCs are talking about social issues. They're talking about cultural edification within the music. There was an increase of youth activism at the time. Political thought and rap music was fomenting its listeners. It produced the likes of myself. I would have to say my basis, my point of departure into activism came from rap music, and that's why I said I'm also their worst nightmare, because that's why they don't play this kind of music, you know, the kind of music that you just heard with the previous two songs that we played, even the opening intro for this show. That kind of music has the ability to produce individuals, young people that become politicized and become civically engaged become activist oriented. My whole basis of me being a social activist and an organizer, it comes from hip hop music when I was a young boy. So now we have the corporate backed explosion, you know, 1995, 96 to present, where mainstream rap becomes more diluted, less political, more materialistic, more capitalist, more consumer-based, more sexist, more less critically engaged. And we can go on and on with as many negative phrases you want to attach to it. And then, you know, so that's, you know, kind of like a basis of hip-hop to present day, looking at those different stages. But where did hip-hop really come from? Well, I have hip-hop starting in the 1940s, you know, in Jamaica, because you had the large sound systems coming out of Jamaica, right? You have these, you know, these huge, you know, the dance halls, and they had these large, these huge speakers that were being used, and they were just blasting out, the sounds. People, you know, were dancing. Well, why would I say that? Why would I talk about these dance halls, you know, where the music was just like explosive, you know what I'm saying? Because it was coming out of these large speakers, some 5-6 feet tall. Well, the godfather of hip hop culture, or the father, I should say, the father of hip hop culture, is DJ Kool Herc. He was Jamaican national. He came to the U.S. in the 60s, but he brought that sound system with him. He brought the whole toasting style with him. But then, like, also in the 1950s, look at the Cross Bronx Expressway, done by, you know, city planner Robert Moses, which basically, you know, was a very, you know, a huge construction undertaking that basically was to basically connect the, you know, city to where he wanted the financial hub to be, which is Manhattan. And a lot of white folks, once they started building that Cross Bronx Expressway through the Bronx, it led to white flight, and people of color, filled the vacuum that was there. But even the folks of color that were living there, Africans from the Caribbean, African Americans, and so forth. It was a very kind of like destructive thing. You can just imagine someone building a highway through your community. What kind of impact a highway literally through your community, and you don't have the economic wherewithal to move, or even the social wherewithal to move as your white counterparts did. I mean, you just imagine what kind of impact that's going to have on your day-to-day life. This is the Cross Bronx Expressway. But jazz, I mean, hip-hop comes from jazz music. Hip-hop comes from jazz and blues, right? Hip-hop comes from jazz and blues music. You look at, for instance, blues music, folks sometimes just completely mischaracterize it just as it's just about, my girl left me or my man left me. No, blues did address that. There were themes like that within blues, but there was also anti-white supremacist themes. There was resistance. There were a lot of blues songs that were resistance-oriented, that resisted white supremacy, that resisted oppression, resisted these kind of things. And so, but without blues, without jazz, there is no hip hop as we know it. So we have to pay homage to that. And so then you have this guy by the name of Jay Rawls and John Robinson, who had this song several years ago called 1960s Jazz Revolution, where they're paying homage to their musical forefathers and foremothers. And so this is Jay Rawls and John Robinson, 1960s Jazz Revolution.
The social systems influence the wisdom, hit them. The nation's politics inspired the apocalypse. Inner city living, synonymous to third world. This era predates Marvin, what's going on. Holiday songs, Lee Morgan on horns. The breakdown of the family structure, gotta be strong. Keep moving on, change is constant. Langston painted pictures of the way the Renaissance went with words. He shared stories with such eloquence. Said it was a contradiction to be black and American. Phenomenal insight was shared during depression by intelligent scientists who walked the urban sections of this wilderness. Still enough from then to now, looking back to move forward. From then to now, had the Panthers in the West, the nations on the East Coast. Malcolm and Martin both were sent back by the toast. Uprise, blaze the fires of ghetto U.S. Only to destroy the economies of you and us. Wicked systems we trust for too long now. History repeats itself. See, we know more now. How to break the chain, how to change the game, how to heal your soul and ease the pain. I write expressions representing the extensions of a man. We're here to answer your questions and lend a helping hand. So lend your ear, cause we're here, my friends. The 1960s Jazz Revolution, again. Lend us an ear, cause we're here, my friends. The 1960s Jazz Revolution, again. Please lend an ear, it's here, my friend. The 1960s Jazz Revolution, again.
Yeah, so that was Jay Rawls, John Robinson, the 1960s Jazz Revolution. I'm saying all this stuff, you can YouTube it, it's just good music. And that song was made, think about how soulful, how smooth that song is. And it's telling a story. I mean, it's addressing politics, but it's telling a story of history, And, I mean, what kind of appreciation of jazz music that we see coming from our youth that really, don't really understand, you know, jazz in its full scope. But imagine, you know, imagine that song was being played. Yes, that song was released in the 2000s. It was released, you know, several years ago, I think 6 or 7 years ago, and never played. I mean, that song is better than anything you can find on the radio. And that, even that song is being suppressed, is completely suppressed. Why? Because you have lines in there where he says, where he's talking about, he's talking about Coltrane and other, you know, jazz artists and folks saying that it's a contradiction to be black in America. Because as Malcolm was saying, you know, how can you, you know, black people, you can't call yourself an American in the U.S. because you don't get the same civil rights, the same human rights that your white counterparts do. They don't give you the rights that they get as being American. You know what I'm saying? So, yes, it's a contradiction, and which also means that, there are issues to be fought for, to be struggled, to continue to be struggled. You know what I'm saying? We have last year in 2013, we know because of the Malcolm X grassroots movement, did a report that showed that every 28 hours in the United States of America, a black person was killed. A total of 313 were killed extrajudicially by way of the police or so-called law enforcement or vigilantes were killed. And the majority of them were unarmed. And so, you know, that you just Google Malcolm X grassroots movement. Their report is right there on their website. So that song was suppressed. But that song is important because that song, you know, as I've used it before with young folks like college students and even high school students as a song to introduce them to jazz history. But also within that song, you can use that song as a point of departure to having really rich dialogue about the social climate of then as well as today. Some of the issues, you know, have gotten worse or are completely stagnated. You know, but they're kept off our minds now because we're so consumed with you know, spending our entire days on Facebook and just posting, reading just relevant stuff. Or, you know, Facebook can be used just like almost like, you know, many things on the Internet as a nice tool to get information out. I see a lot of folks using Facebook as not a tool to get critical information out, but as a tool to embrace just a lot of just foolishness. You know what I'm saying? So, it's really critical that we think about these things and we bring this message and bring this kind of music to younger folks. And use it as a point of departure to teach history, to teach social studies, to teach social justice, to have dialogues about history, social justice, social studies, you name it. So I also like to connect hip-hop, just even taking it even further back to hieroglyphics, you know, what's commonly known as hieroglyphics, but what the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Cretans, as we know, the term Egypt comes from the Greeks. You know, they renamed, you know, that part of the world. You know, they renamed that North African nation Egypt. You know, but it was the original name is Kemet, right? And the ancient Cretans, if you will, if you want, the ancient Egyptians, refer to hieroglyphics as metra, you know, the words of the gods, words of God, you know, and hieroglyphics. I connect hieroglyphics to graffiti art because graffiti art is telling a story and tells stories, just like hieroglyphics told stories. They continue to tell stories and will continue to tell stories as long as they are preserved, and it's told a range of stories that have to do with actual history and how you know, our ancestors lived back then. So I connect hieroglyphics to graffiti. And graffiti, modern, like contemporary hip-hop graffiti, all right, hip-hop graffiti, because also the Romans had political graffiti and satire. But hip-hop, contemporary hip-hop graffiti starts about 1965, 1966, you know, in Philadelphia, Cornbread and Cool Earl, two graffiti artists. So you got to pay homage to Philadelphia. It started there, moved its way up to New York, and just kind of took off in New York and you know, something like global now. But hip-hop, I mean, graffiti art was used as a tool for young folks to express themselves, very, very talented young folks to express themselves. They had been marginalized, and they're going to tell a story, And some of it was to broadcast and say, hey, this is me, I'm so-and-so, I'm Don D. But other graffiti art was artwork that told that, you know, had images of young brothers who were killed by the police, and it would say, rest in peace, you know, so-and-so. And it would be painted on the side of trains, you know, oftentimes in the whole city, you know what I'm saying, whether you were in Manhattan or the Bronx, you would eventually see that train as it came through your community. And so they were also like, I like to look at them as moving, you know, social murals that told stories that the newspapers weren't telling. And then we transitioned. I spoke about Kool Herc, you know, migrating to New York City in 1967 from Jamaica to the Bronx. He is known as the godfather of hip hop because he did all of the elements well. He did all the elements well. It's called the godfather. He's the father of hip hop. The godfather of hip hop culture is African Mambaataa. The father is DJ Kool Herc. 1968, there was a major, major gang epidemic in New York City, and that's where you have like sort of African Bada coming out of that gang culture, where he takes a trip to South Africa and is really educated on a range of things that have to do with the history of African people within that part of the world, and decides to change his name, you know, to call himself African Mbata, and he starts an organization called the Universal Zulu Nation, which continues to be an organization throughout the world that has thousands and thousands of members. I think it has anywhere between 25,000 to 35,000 members today. You know, and that's an organization that comes from hip hop, and as African Mbata is known as the godfather of hip hop. He's also had the first, you know, rap, you know, radio show, you know, on WHBI in New York City. And at the end of his broadcast, he would say peace. He would say hip hop is peace, love, unity, and having fun. You know, so you knew that hip hop was peace, love, unity, and having fun. They don't want you to know that today. So the MC, I connect the MC, the rapper, to the griot. We know the griot, G-R-I-O-T, is ancient African storyteller. You know, so the griot, often used poetic license to tell stories of things that were going on in the community, to tell stories of what had been going on previously, you know, to pass down history and information that preceded the present generation. So, that's why some MCs refer to themselves as the underground griots or the griots, you know. So we look at the black, we look at the black power movement and the struggle, the African people's struggle in the U.S. to gain human rights and to gain civil rights and more political leverage. And so you have the likes of the last poets and Gil Scott-Heron in the late 60s, the 70s, who really, you know, I would consider them, you know, the precursors to the present day MC, because they were rappers. They were using spoken word and poetic license, and they were, you know, and a lot of their music was shaped by what was going on socially, you know. And so one of those examples is, for instance, the Last Poets had a song, "When the Revolution Comes," and this is "The Revolution Comes" right here.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercial. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
I hope pearly white teeth fall the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end, and nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats to survive. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes, guns and rifles will be taking the place of poems and essays. Black cultural centers will be forts supplying the revolutionaries with food and arms when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, white death will fall the walls of museums and churches, breaking the lie that enslaved our mothers. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jesus Christ is going to be standing on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 125th Street, trying to catch the first gypsy cab out of Harlem. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Drew Merchant will give away matzo balls and gefilte fish to anyone they see with an afro. Frank Shippen will give away the Apollo to the first person he sees wearing a blue dashiki. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. Afros gonna be trying to straighten their heads. And straighten heads gonna be trying to wear afros. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
But until then, you know and I know niggas will party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party. Some might even die before the revolution comes.
Powerful, powerful, powerful. When the revolution comes, by Last Poets. And yeah. Ooh. A lot of information in that song. A lot of stuff within that song to think about. That is the Last Poets, When the Revolution Comes. And as I said before, I consider them you know, definitely a part of hip hop history. You know, they were using poetic license and they were telling stories. I mean, as you said, the song, they were telling stories. You know, giving social commentary that was quite frankly not going to be found in any way, shape, form, or fashion on the mainstream airwaves. So that was The Revolution Comes by The Last Poets. And so we move, you look at beatboxing, which also is an element of hip-hop. I like to connect that to Hambone. As we know, kidnapped and enslaved Africans that were brought to the U.S. and you know, what is now known as the U.S., but also brought throughout the hemisphere, known as America, the Western Hemisphere. As we know, America is not just the United States. America is the Caribbean, South America. These are the Americas, you know. The proper term for this country is the United States. It is not America. America is the entire continent, the entire Western Hemisphere. So when enslaved Africans were brought throughout the Western Hemisphere, they obviously tried to control them, and you can't just physically control somebody forever. You have to control their mind, and you have to rip them away from their culture. And so they tried to take away their various aspects of their culture, renaming them. You know, there were no Africans running around with the name Williams or Smith or Richardson or O'Neill. These are Jones, even, or Washington. These are names that were given to them by whoever their slave owners the names were. And so those folks who are black today that carry those names, those are the same names, those are the names of their ancestors, slave masters. So they ripped away their names, you know, renamed them, you know, first and last names, you know, they took away their drums. They tried to take away their drums, but being the ingenious, innovative human beings that they were, these Africans, you know, started to beat their chest and to simulate the sounds of drums, and other Africans would sing along as the chest was being tapped and slapped with your hand, and that paved way for hand bone, and hand bone paved way for beatboxing, which is, you know, the ability to make sounds, you know, with your mouth. And, you know, and so you didn't have to have a beat machine. And so, you know, you could be in a crew and somebody that could beatbox would be beatboxing and somebody else would be rapping or freestyling. 1973, I mentioned before, DJ Kool Herc is the godfather, I mean, the father of hip-hop, you know. And in 1973, in August of 1973, at 1520 Cedric Avenue, he threw a party for his sister, and he invited two local rappers, Clark Kent and Coco Rock, and he had them, you know, say their raps over these beats that he created by elongating the break beats, you know, the chorus parts of songs on these records, you know, that were being played, and he just kind of elongated them, and they would rap over the chorus music. So that was 1973. I mentioned to you before African Bambaataa and Zulu Nation. You know, the term, the phrase hip hop comes from a guy by the name of DJ Lovebug Starsky, but it was African, and that comes about 1974. But African Bambaataa is the one who popularized the phrase. He popularized the phrase hip hop. But DJ Lovebug Starsky coined the phrase hip hop. Grand Wizard Theodore is the creator of the scrat. So, you know, when you look at some of the videos of the 80s and 90s, you see whether it's, for instance, Gangstar, and you see Primo right in the middle of the video, they'll show him on the one and twos, to, you know, scratching on the turntables. You know, that invention, that skill set comes from an invention or a discovery by DJ Grand Wizard Theodore, who was, you know, he was playing around with his turntables. You know, his mom was yelling, it was shouting something to him, and he took his hand off. And as he took his hand off, he inadvertently made this chugga chugga sound on the record. And he so liked it, so when his mom was done hollering at him, he went back and manipulated that. And then there was other DJs that really took it to another level, such as Grandmaster Flash and so forth. So that's got to talk about women, you know, and hip-hop, because without women, hip-hop wouldn't be what it is, what we see it is today. 1976, Mercedes Ladies, they paved the way for other female groups. The Mercedes Ladies was, you know, was an all-female, all-woman hip-hop crew. You look at Sylvia Robinson, who was the founder and owner of Sugar Hill Records. Without her, there is no Rapper's Delight, you know, and as we know, Rapper's Delight, you know, was the number of Sugar Hill Gang. She provided the studio time, the financing. She also did that for The Message. I would say, you know, the first, you know, conscious hip-hop song, song that addressed, you know, a myriad social issues that came out in 1982. She also provided the funding and the backing for that song to come about. But you know, this is a song that is timeless. Both songs are timeless, but here is just a short snippet of Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight, brought to us, made possible by the likes of a black woman by the name of Sylvia Robinson. Thank you.
out the rocket to the bang bang boogie. Say up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. See, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say, up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie, let's rock. You don't stop, rock the rhythm, that'll make your body rock. Well, so far, you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along. And next on the mic is my man, Hank. Come on, Hank, sing that. Check it out, I'm the C-A-S-N, the O-V-A, and the rest is F-L-Y. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix, and these reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1", and I'm tons of fun, and I dress to a D. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so vicious. I got bodyguards, I got two big guns, and definitely ain't the whack. I got a lick.
And that was Sugar Hill Gang, and that, as you know, I know folks will listen to that right there when I was playing it. I know you're probably upset that I stopped it, but, you know, due to, in the interest of time, I had to stop it. But I know people were bopping their heads. And that song, like I said, 1979, Rapper's Delight, and 2013 evokes the same kind of reaction. If you're sitting down, you almost have to get out of your seat. If you can't get out of your seat, you're bobbing your head and you're dancing, you know, the same way you would have danced in 1979, 1980, maybe not the same exact way, but you would be dancing nonetheless. So that's Sugar Hill Gang, Rappers Delight, as I said, made possible by Sylvia Robinson. As we continue to go on, hip-hop starts to gain more mainstream exposure. 1981, ABC's 2020, with Barbara Walters, you know, does an interview with African Mbata, and Breaking, then she, you know, follows her and her camera crew follows, you know, African Mbata throughout the city of New York, kind of examining this new phenomena to white America, you know, just to white America. You hear mainstream America, that's cold for white America. So they, you know, this is their first kind of insight, you know, to glimpse to what was going on, you know, in the world of hip hop, what hip hop was. Movies like Flashdance that came out in 1983, you know, featured B-boys within that movie, with Jennifer Beals walking through Central Park with her friend, and there's B-boys within Central Park, and a lot of West Coast cats, when they saw that movie, they were inspired to take up the art of b-boying and create their own style, you know, of b-boying, you know, with popping and locking, Sam Boogaloo, Electric Boogaloos, this is the impact of how folks were exposed to hip hop and what kind of impact it had on them and what kind of inspiration it gave them to become involved in hip hop culture. And then we look at, you know, for instance, 1984, you know, we see movies like Crush Groove, Breaking, the Disorderlies, Beach Street coming in the mid 80s, these movies coming about. The West Coast influence starts to become more and more powerful. You know, you see groups, like Run DMC coming out of New York, you know, really starting to have a more powerful voice in terms of exposure in so-called mainstream America, where they collaborate with Aerosmith, songs like Walk This Way. And then we have the golden era. Yes, the golden era, as we said, the mid-80s to, I would say, maybe the early to mid-90s, the era of consciousness, if you will. I could go on forever. Poor Righteous Teachers, the Boogie Down Productions, the KRS-One's, the Eric B. and Rakim, Public Enemies. I mean, we can go on and on. Queen Latifah, I'm Only Love, Women and Ladies First. I mean, this is all happening within that range of time, mid-80s to early to mid-90s. All this music comes about. And so we have songs like, for instance, these are songs that I was exposed to, throughout that. So we have, for instance, like the Jungle Brothers, you know, had a song called, and they were part of the Native Tongues. The Native Tongues was kind of like a hip-hop crew that was a collection of different groups like Tribe Called Quest and individuals like Queen Latifah, I'm Only Love. You know, the Jungle Brothers were part of this crew called the Native Tongues. And, powerful. And so there was a song called by the Jungle Brothers called Acknowledge Your Own History. And this is a song I'm trying to tell you. This is something that African youth, black youth were thinking. But then you have these rappers that come along and you know, the likes of the Jungle Brothers that really articulate and speak to you in a way that really puts things in perspective of why you're not getting, you know, why you're not getting your history in various schools that we occupy, why you're not getting a balance of history, why it's just all white history, why it's just all praising white people and their history and forcing us to praise even folks that were slave owners of our ancestors. You know, why are we praising Christopher Columbus, who was a rapist, a murderer, a mutilator, a plunderer, a genocider, you know? And so Jungle Brothers had this song called Acknowledge Your History, and here's a little bit of that song where they break down. I mean, this is African youth, black youth speaking out and telling us, you know what I'm saying? Hey, we got to acknowledge our own history. Acknowledge your history.
You don't know who you are. Look back into your past, brother. Look back into your past.
You don't know who you are. Look back into your past, sister. Look back into your past, brother.
Father was a king. He wore fat gold chains and fat ruby rings. Nobody believes this to be true. Maybe it's because my eyes ain't blue. You ain't gonna find it in your history book. Come here, young blood, and take a look. You dig down deep inside this hardcover. Don't you know that you was bar, brother? All you read about is slavery. Never about the black man's bravery. You look at the pictures and all they show is African people with bones in their noses. That ain't true. That's a lie. You didn't get that from my lemon pie.
Yeah, I could class, I got a Z, cause history meant nothing to me, except a definite nap, that's why I often sat on my back. I told the girls to write a rhyme, cause I didn't know all times of black men's time. When I was young, my mama told me stories of black people's fight to bring us glory. I used to think these were stories to put me to sleep, but now I know mama's talk wasn't cheap. I know Africa for Africans, and history's the blood of every woman and man.
Now I begin another search. The incredibly involved, the incredibly difficult, and incredibly frustrating search. The incredibly involved, the incredibly difficult, and incredibly frustrating search. Trying to pull together the history of a people.
Page one, page two, page three, and still no signs of me.
Yeah.
So I listened to the table of the contents. They wrote a little thing about us in the project.
What?
The only history we make is if we kill somebody, rape somebody, but other than that, we're nobody. Speaking like a brother living in the jungle. I know I was here first, but I remain humble.
Now it's time to rekindle the fire. A tribe of young brothers with the eye of the tiger.
Acknowledge your own. We have a home. Put on this earth to live and roam.
Christopher chose to explore.
Discovered America.
Yeah, sure. He thought the planet was square. Traveled many places, but we already had been there. We left tracks, backtrack back.
First civilization.
You know where that was found at. Looking for the true black days of glory, but you're reading history. That's his story.
The red for the blood and the black for the man. The green is the color that stands for the land. The red for the blood and the black for the man. The green is the color that stands for the land.
And that is Jungle Brothers, man. I know, yeah, that's that soulful, powerful song, breaking it down and alluding, saying, hey, we had been here before Columbus. We had been in this so-called New World. You know, how can it be a New World when people are living here thousands, tens of thousands of years, you know, as a Native American brothers, you know, and I say Native American, you know, because Chris Columbus never stepped foot in North America, but as we know, the Americas is the entire hemisphere. And so, you know, whether they were Olmecs, you know, in Guatemala, you know, or if they were, you know, Wampanoag in Massachusetts, you know, in the New England area. These people had been here for tens of thousands of years prior to, you know, so-called, you know, Christopher Columbus coming here, Cristobal Colon, his real name, coming to this part of the world. But Africans had traveled here before that. You know, we know that folks coming out of, you know, Abu Bakr II, you know, and folks from present day, from what we know as present day Mali, had traveled to you know, parts of the Western Hemisphere long before Columbus. I mean, Columbus wasn't even the first European to come to this part of the world, the Western Hemisphere, North America. I mean, we know he never stepped foot on North America, but even the Vikings had come before him. And you know, but these Africans came not even as the Vikings or Columbus. They didn't come as conquerors or anything like that. They didn't come as, you know, as early day imperialists. They came expecting to see other people wherever they were headed, and they brought gifts to be exchanged. And we know by the works of Van Sertima and others, you know, really powerful book, they came before Columbus, that details, you know, this, and they, you know, they brought gifts and exchanged gifts from the Eastern world to, you know, the Western Hemisphere, and these indigenous people from the Western Hemisphere, you know, gave these Africans everything from botany and so forth, and exchanged them for, you know, things like gold-tipped spears and so forth. And they built these huge Olmec heads that are still in existence today in places like Guatemala, these huge Olmec heads that were created in respect and in deference to these dark-skinned, these black-skinned, woolly-haired travelers, you know, from the east. So, you know, they allude to that in that song, Acknowledge Your History, as well as other things. I mean, these you know, young men are speaking out, like, yo, listen, fix this in. We know what's going on. We know you're suppressing our history. You know we're suppressing our history. We know the only time that you say anything about us is if it's crime related, or it has to do with, you know, trying to denigrate, you know, our culture and our people, you know. And so that was a powerful song. So you imagine that song and being a 15-year-old listening to that song when that song comes out with 1989 as well. What kind of impact do you think that would have if there was a song like that being played on regular rotation and young people, especially young people of color, heard that song over and over again? Exactly. There's music out there like that, and that's why they suppress it. And so that's where, you know, hoping we'll get a healthy anger of what this corporate media is. It is the most powerful entity, but it is a very nefarious, and it's a power of mental manipulation, and it embraces racist stereotypes of people, because it actually suppresses these kind of images, these kind of messages, and so forth. And it goes on to this day. There's also a song called Self Destruction that came out, in 1989, wow, Self Destruction, need I say more, that addressed the issue of violence within inner city communities. And really, it was like the who's list of MCs that came together to put together this 6-minute long PSA, this 6-minute long public service announcement in the form of a rap song called Self Destruction. Here's a little sample.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
it's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap, the name. MC's is right here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Sugar Brothers, life with a knife, that is life. Try, cause you died of trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gang bang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man, cause that's
self-destruction. Yeah, self-destruction. So that song goes on for another 4 minutes. It's a 6 minute song, and I really implore you to go online and to Google, I mean, or to go onto YouTube and type in self-destruction and watch the video and listen, because there's a video that accompanied it. Watch the video, listen to the lyrics. Powerful. I mean, Kumo D says, back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan. I shouldn't have to run from a black man, because that's self-destruction. You're headed for self-destruction. So that song grabbed a hold of young people like myself at the time, 1989, and you know, kind of just slapped us in the face with information and narrative that said, yo, listen, you know, we're facing things like institutional racism, we're facing white supremacy, we're facing, you know, structural poverty that is anchored, you know, you know, classism and institutional racism. You know, let's not, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, and we know that violence, you know, comes out of, you know, is the offspring of poverty. But it just kind of woke us up and said, listen, we can't be killing each other. We got to come together. We got to come together in unity, you know. So it's powerful, powerful song. And there are other songs that, you know, and other movements like the HEAL, like humans educated against lies, the HEAL Yourself, you know, movement and the West Coast, that we're all in the same gang. MCs, rappers coming together and putting together these songs as PSAs to address social issues. It was a powerful thing. So the golden era, throughout the golden era, there were the name drops. You heard the names, you know, these kind of names were being dropped in different songs. Everyone from Stokely Carmichael, you know, a la, you know, Kwame Ture, to, you know, obviously Martin Luther King, Mandela, Charles Drew, Ida B. Wells, Malcolm X, Steve Biko. I mean, these are all names that were being dropped in songs. So here we have some of the issues that were discussed in the golden era: rampant police brutality, rampant poverty, educational equities, racism and oppression, senseless violence, global issues such as apartheid, imperialism, war, politics, media, you know, Knowledge of King. Knowledge is King is a song by Kumo D, and he says in that song, he says, I know the media hypes. The media dictates, the mind rotates, the way you think and syncopates at a slow pace. I mean, he's talking about media literacy within that. He addresses war in that song, you know, saying that the most of these soldiers don't even know what they're fighting for. The military-industrial complex, prison-industrial complex, all these things are addressed. We're addressed in songs throughout the golden era of hip-hop. And some of these issues are being addressed even today as we speak. Police brutality, rampant poverty, all these are issues that are being addressed today as we speak. As we speak, they're being addressed. But you wouldn't know that. You would think it's a thing of the past. I would say there's even more rappers today that are addressing this thing, because hip-hop is much larger, you know. It's a much larger entity, but it even shows the force, the nefarious force and power of the corporate media, the mainstream media, because they suppress these powerful voices, like Brother Ali, coming out of the Twin Cities, And Brother Ali, you know, has, you know, he's an artist. I'm just thinking of off the top of my head as I went through the switchboard. I want to pull up a song by Brother Ali because that's a song that, you know, he has a song called Uncle Sam. Goddamn, he has a song called Uncle Sam. And it goes a little something like this.
The name of this song is Uncle Sam. The show tune, but the show ain't been written for it yet. We're going to see if Tony Jerome and the band can make work this shit out for me. Straighten me out right quick. Welcome to the United States, land of the peace, home of the slave, Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred and proud. Let's do this shit real, come on now. Smoke and mirrors, stripes and stars, stoning for the cross in the name of God. Bloodshed, genocide, rape and fraud, written to the pages of the law, good law. The cold continent Latin child ran away one day and started acting style. King of where the wild things are, daddy's proud, cause the Roman Empire done passed it down. Imported and tortured the workforce that never healed the wounds or shook the curse off. Now the grown up Goliath nation holding open all distance for the part of David. And you still, nothing can save you. You question the rain, you get rushed in and chained up. Fist raised, but I must be insane, cause I can't figure a single goddamn way to change. But welcome to the United States, land of the sea, home of the slave, the Grand Imperial Guard, where the dollar is sacred.
So that was Brother Ali. That was Brother Ali. And that was just, you know, like I said, just a sample from, you know, one of his many songs. And, you know, and it's, like I said, it's just a sample, but there's so many other songs that that continue to, and I, you know, I listen to the song, and I, you know, you heard me, I can't help but bob my head to it. I can't help but be inspired by the lyrics, to hear the lyrics, and the lyrics are quite mentally intoxicating in a good way, and it intoxicates you with a level of political awareness that I think that can, you know, that has the ability to move people to become more and more organized or civically engaged, but just conscious on a completely another level, you know. And so one of the other artists that I'd like to even highlight that's out today is my comrade Capital X, who you know, is a comrade. I'm honored to know him quite well, and you know, he has a song called Revolutionary. So this is Capital X with Revolutionary. I just want to give you some examples of artists that are out today that you may not have heard of. That, and if you have, you know, most you know, young people that consider themselves hip hop fans definitely have not heard of these artists, and that's by design. That's not by accident. That's by design. So here's Capital X. This is a little snippet of his song called Revolutionary. Capital X.
So we say we always see the black out the body. They do the thing they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said the last words on my lips. I am a revolutionary. I am.
I'm tired of the brutality and all the corruption. They arrested for nothing. I'm ready to do something. The prisoners are seeing the corporate hustle. Need to be this man so that we continue to struggle. Open up your eyes. Stop living in a bubble. The country you would die for is real quick to fuck you. I reach out to touch you. Revolutionary sound. When I die, like more than that.
songs and a hump in the ground. Wanna leave a world liberated, free from oppression, free from oppression. Wars and racism, I put a bullet in your brain if it'll make any difference. Dismantling colonialism and imperialism. I wanna see every politician rotting in prison. That's not a mission statement, that's my fucking mission. Trying to make us all complacent. We went from chattel slavery to economical enslavement. They take a right to bear arms, leaving us hopeless. There's a lot of people are slaves at any given moment. Our system is broken. I speak for the unspoken. The every grieving mother is death penalty opponent. The genocide and slaughter of our sons and daughters. Guns are in order. Guerrillas without borders. I'm old school, so fuck a new world order. But I spit with blessed kids just like holy water. I stand against oppressors with a mic and a shank. Cause I'd rather die free. Have a diamond of brand. Fuck a Benz, fuck a Bentley, fuck an MTV crib. I'm tired of living how they tell me to live.
I am a revolutionary. That was capital X. Revolutionary, yes. Brooklyn born and Newark, New Jersey raised artist, you know, capital X. You know, I had the honor to do some workshops with him out in Norway, you know, a couple of years ago, and he does his thing. It's a man who was committed to abolishing the death penalty, you know, the prison industrial complex. So he does a lot of work around bringing attention to the American brutal American gulag, the American prison system, and it's cruel and unusual punishment where we have, roughly around 80,000 people who are incarcerated in the U.S. Prisons who are, solitary confinement. And some of these people, as I said, have been in solitary confinement for 30-plus years. Can you imagine being in solitary confinement for a week, let alone 30 years? That's cruel and unusual punishment, as defined by some more civilized nations. So Capital X does a lot of work around that. So why don't we hear about Capital X? Why don't we hear about Brother Ali? Why don't we hear about Dead Prez, you know, Immortal Technique? You know, why don't we hear about these artists and their music? Well, it's clear. It's because their music has been suppressed, is being suppressed as we speak, actively being suppressed. They do not want that music and information out there whatsoever. So at the same time, you know, we have something where, for instance, when we look back to 1928, there's a book called Propaganda that was written by Ed Bernays, who is no ally of ours. I mean, he worked for the elites. You know, he worked for the imperialists. You know, he was a propagandist. I mean, he was one of the early fathers of public relations. You know, is responsible for, you know, women, you know, smoking more cigarettes. You know, he just to give you an insight in terms of, you know, his brilliance and, creating marketing schemes, you know, public relations schemes to get women to smoke more cigarettes, you know, by having, you know, these luxurious models in fur coats, out on the street smoking cigarettes. Because at the time, smoking cigarettes was, you know, considered a taboo for women, you know. So he worked for Viceroy, you know, cigarettes and was able to get more women to start smoking cigarettes. He's the reason why, you know, the bacon industry, you know, they got a hold of him and said, you know, he came up with the whole scheme, you know, if I take a select, you know, doctors and say 4 out of 5 doctors, most Americans are not going to ask how many doctors I polled. They're not going to ask how many doctors were interviewed for this. So we'll just say we'll get a select, you know, select doctors, and we'll say 4 out of 5 doctors say that starting your day with a couple of strips of bacon is a start to a healthy day. And like I said, boom, he was hired by the Creel Commission, you know, to get in for World War I, you know, out of the Woodrow Wilson, you know, that racist Woodrow let me get started. That can be a whole other show, you know, breaking down Woodrow Wilson as well as many other U.S. presidents. But, you know, Woodrow Wilson wanted to get more and more American people behind World War One, you know, to embrace, you know, the sending of U.S. troops into World War One. So, you know, Ed Bernays comes up with support our troops, and they have this thing called the Five-Minute Men. They send these folks around, these ambassadors of the war, you know, all around to, like, Rotary clubs, to Elks clubs, to community centers, you know, and so forth, and, you know, to just kind of just infiltrate, people's, you know, minds with this notion that supporting the war, you're supporting the troops, and you have to support the troops, and, you know, there's no, you know, it's no trade-off. Supporting troops means sending them over there, send them over to fight and potentially die, you know. That's Ed Bernays. But I say that because in his book, he writes, in that book called Propaganda, he writes, in almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind. That's deep. Think about that. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind. Nothing is different today. The public mind's wires are being pulled by those that control the media today, because so many Americans lack the ability, the concrete ability to critically think and to deconstruct these narratives before they're fed to them. That's why alternative media, whether it's internet-based or otherwise, is so vastly important for us to get critical information out there that's being suppressed. You know, that's just kind of just something to think about as we think about, you know, hip hop. And so we look at, for instance, Lowry Mays, who is the, former CEO of Clear Channels Communication, founder of Clear Channels Communications. I believe he still is a big time executive within that corporation, the largest radio corporation in America. They own over 1,200 radio stations. And before the Telecom Act of 1996, the cap, the most you could own, the most radio stations you could own would be 40 AM and 40 FM. After the Telecom Act of 1996, that all changed, you know, and so you had these corporations like Clear Channel going from owning 40 to literally owning, you know, over 1,000, over 1,200, you know, radio stations. You know, that deregulation is not a good thing. It is not a good thing for diversity of information to be gotten out there. So as we move forward, we have to think about some of these images that are out there. To think about some of the images that are out there right now in hip-hop, right? So if I ask you the question, what did you think about, say, for instance, some of the images that were being proliferated and promoted about black people in the 20s and 30s and even before then? The images of the Piccaninny, the Sambo, the images of, you know, and the throwing around attaching the word to black people as being coons. You know, they couldn't find a black person. They'd get folks like Al Jolson to put shoe polish on their face, black shoe polish on their face, and to act what they wanted the broader public to see, to believe that black people acted that way. You know, that movie, The Birth of a Nation, I was talking about that scumbag Woodrow Wilson earlier, that scumbag Woodrow Wilson. You know, there's a movie called Birth of a Nation where there was no black actors at all. All the actors were white, and they wore shoe polish. And the movie Birth of a Nation was to really kind of, it was like a highlighting, you know, the importance of the Ku Klux Klan as being a good thing. And so it depicted black men as being, you know, these violent, hypersexual, they're coming to rape your women, they're, you know, this is why we need the Ku Klux Klan. And Woodrow Wilson, you know, gave it a thumbs up. You know, he loved the movie. He showed it in the White House, you know. So these images that are around, you know, these, if I ask you these images, you'll say, oh, man, they're completely racist. What are you talking about? They're super racist. The Sambo, these minstrel shows, they're racist. They're racist. So why is it that we don't see images of today? And so, like, in my workshop, actually, I have two slides. I have some slides of images of what I was just describing. And then I have images, and I ask people what they think about that. And I say, well, what do you think about these images then? And I'll show them that the next slide will be images of black and brown rappers that are promoted today, you know, whether it's Lil Wayne or Trinidad James or what's his face, Juicy J or 2 Chainz. I mean, we can go on and on, you know what I'm saying? You know, Nicki Minaj, you know, promoting, you know, putting, you know, black women out there like the Jezebel. What do you think about, and so it's like, wow, and it's like kind of catches people because they don't think of these images today. A lot of folks don't. Some folks do. Some folks who have recaptured their minds or never let their minds be captured in the first place see these images of rappers today as being extremely racist. But some folks don't see them as being extremely racist or racist at all because they embrace that music, they embrace whatever, these images have been popularized. They've been popularized on even a greater level. And so it has become a part of their reality. That, oh, man, that's just what, you know what I'm saying, that's what black men and women, you know what I'm saying, they're like. You know what I'm saying? That's just status quo, which that's not the case. That's not the case. These are individuals who they have shaped and who have been programmed themselves, and therefore they're you know, willing participants in their own exploitation and their people's own exploitation and oppression. And because they're misguided, you know, they're misguided, but they don't represent, you know, the broader face of black America or African America in any shape, form, or fashion. But that's the reality some people live in. So, you know, because at the same time when the 20s and 30s, I mean, you had images like Du Bois and, you know, Marcus Garvey and Bessie Smith, and even before that, you know, Ida B. Wells. You know, but those images, they didn't want to use those images to sell those products. They didn't want to use those images to sell, you know, soap powder, detergent, and candy. No, they wanted to use the images. They wanted to create these caricatures of black people looking like aliens, and you know what I'm saying, and they're non-human, they're humanoids. No, they didn't want that, because if they had the images of Du Bois and Bessie Smith, they had them on their products, so they popularized those images, and more importantly, what these people stood for, then that would slap in the face. That would be a great contradiction to what they had been putting out there about black people, portraying black people as, you know, as humanoids, as intellectually inferior to their so-called white counterparts. That's, you know, they would smack in the face of that. So they don't put it out there, you know what I'm saying? So they suppress the images and the messages of the Du Bois, the Bessie Smiths, you know, Marcus Garvey. They suppress them and they malign them, you know, and they vilify them, and you know what I'm saying? And they lie about them. Yeah. So, but as we think of today, so what's going on today? So what is going on today? What is being maligned? What's being suppressed? Well, I just told you what's being suppressed. The images of folks like Bahamadia, you know, a black woman rapper out of Philadelphia, does not dress scantily clad, you know, is not going to participate in her own exploitation, you know, the images of Dead Prez, Immortal Technique, Dark Sunrise, Acrobat. I mean, we can go on and on. These rappers, these MCs are not being portrayed or promoted in any shape, form, or fashion by the mainstream media, the corporate media, because the corporate media itself is a most institutionally racist apparatus. You know, it's one thing to have balance, to say, okay, we're going to provide, you know, for every Trinidad James song, we're going to have, you know, we're going to have a song by Moral Technique or somebody else, and just whatever. They had some kind of balance, but there's no balance. So they're playing certain artists, and at the same time, they're suppressing other artists purposefully. That makes them complicit in the crime. They are perpetrators of the crime. They are institutionally racist, actively racist, you know, and we need to see the corporate media for what it is, exactly what it is. You know, whether it's Viacom or Cumulus or Clear Channel or MSNBC or any of that, that's exactly what they are. Whether their job is to play music videos or their job is to provide news and information, MSNBC is culpable because they suppress large swaths of critical information around not just domestic issues but also geopolitical issues. They are the champions. They are the beaters of the war drums, you know, to try to cheerlead, you know, for America's imperialist war. So it's important that we understand this. And so I want to play a song. I just mentioned Trinidad James. There's a song that he came out with called Gold Everything and became very, very popular, and it's still played in clubs, you know. It's called Gold Everything, Gold Everything. And I implore you to please Google or YouTube the video, and you'll see the video even takes the coonery to a completely another level, completely another level. But beyond his coonery, like, you know, him, you know, selling out himself and his people in the interest of to make a bunch of white, you know, corporate executives very, very happy. Beyond that, who makes Trinidad James popular? So it's not just, you know, to look at, you have to look at the psychological drug dealer, and that is the corporate media. Who makes him popular? Who sells this image to the masses? So we have to look at the corporate media and the corporate media executives that make these decisions to popularize somebody like Trinidad James. Look at them as the same way we look at drug dealers. They are psychological drug dealers. They are peddling psychological opiates that are very, very destructive to not the mind, body, and soul, because we know that these images also play a role in public policy. They play a role in terms of justifying the stop and frisk policy that we see in cities like New York City, the shoot first, ask question later policies that we see with a lot of police departments in America in terms of you know, how policing and racial profile is done. So we have to look at who makes these images popular, the corporate media entities. So this is a song called Gold Everything. And, yes, it is brace yourself for some really coonish lyrics. You know, this is Gold Everything by Trinidad James.
Yeah. It sound like 007 or something. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Jane, gold all in my chain. Gold all in my ring. Gold all in my watch. Don't believe me, just watch. Nigga, don't believe me, just watch. Don't believe me, just watch. Nigga, don't believe me, just watch. Don't believe me, just watch. Gold all in my chain. Gold all in my ring. Gold all in my watch. Don't believe me, just watch. This ain't for no fuck, nigga. You a real nigga, then fuck with me. This one for the hood, nigga. Hipster bitches that shop is linen. Dark skin, light skin, Asian and white women. Hype beasts, we know about you. Don't buy shoes unless they're popular. For the hoes, my nigga. That pussy poppin' that Magic City. Got you strong, my nigga. Then come match that shit with me. Smoking me, my nigga.
Okay.
Then don't pass that shit to me.
Uh-uh.
This one for my nigga. And bitches buy that money.
Cash out.
Got a law, trust a bread. Them bad hoes that honest.
Uh-huh.
I don't fuck with no snitches.
So don't tell me who tell her.
Nope.
This one for them colleges, them bad hoes that spell. Shout out to them freshmen on Instagram, straight flexing. Pop the molly, I'm sweating. Pop the molly, I'm sweating. Mama always told me, boy, count your blessings.
Count them all.
In God, I trust. So I kept counting them frankly.
I'ma do that,
I'm too sly, you know this. Let me give your ass a checklist.
Go,
one
go.
Gold watch, two gold chains, six gold rings, it's nothing.
God damn.
OG joints, them hot socks, no shirt on, I'm stunned.
Okay.
And this song for them fuck niggas who hating on you this summer.
Fuck.
Talk shit behind your back, but won't say shit in public. Fuck.
Yeah.
Gold all in my chain. Gold all in my ring.
Okay, I throw in the towel. I can't take it. Can't take any more. All right, so sorry. I had to cut that song off. I'm sure. Hopefully, you know, folks had their Batman decoder rings on to kind of translate what the hell that guy was saying. Trinidad James. Yeah. Whew. It's just, gosh, man. And yeah, not too happy with the fact that this guy, you know, uses Trinidad in his. His title, but anyways, beyond, more importantly, you heard that, you know, golly, man, that song, I just heard that song a million times because, you know, and it just gets worse each time, it's just worse, and the only reason I listened to it, I just want to put it out there, why would you listen to it a million times? Well, I've listened to it so many times because I've had to play it during workshops and so forth, just so, to kind of highlight, you know, what, you know, to deconstruct, you know, this information that is quite the information, messages, images that are quite deleterious, mentally, soulfully, physically, you name it. But yeah, it's been a while since I've actually heard that song, but it's wow. Yeah, so that's Gold Everything by Trinidad James. But what kind of human being, what kind of scumbag would make that song popular? What kind of human being would make that? Well, the corporate execs that control the media, the corporate media, those are the kind of scumbags that would make that popular. Yeah, those kind of scumbags. They have no vested interest in black and brown communities. They have vested interest in increasing their bottom line. They don't give a damn if it is at the expense of the communities in which these rappers come from. They don't care. Matter of fact, it all works well with them because you know what? They're not trying to make $1 billion or millions of dollars off of promoting images that uplift, you know, a community or images and messages that that civically and politically engage a community. No, they're not interested in that. They want to keep those communities as dumbed down as possible, at the same time, you know, expanding the stereotypically racist images of people of color and increasing their bottom line. That is what they do. So, moving on. As we said, the corporate name drop today, as opposed to the name drop in the golden era, which was names of African historical figures, everyone from Kwame Nkrumah to Stokely Carmichael to, you know, you name it, you know, Malcolm X, all these different names were dropped during the golden era, as they're dropped to even today. They are name dropped today. You know what I'm saying? Dead Prez has, you know, dropped the name Kwame Nkrumah and Lumumba and so forth. But these artists are being suppressed, so, you know, most folks don't know that they, that Prez exists. But today, the corporate name drop is Cristal, Moet, Gucci, you know, there's a rapper called Gucci Mane. Gucci Mane. Diamonds, Rolex, you know what I'm saying? But then, you know, when we look at, for instance, Lowry Mays, founder of Clear Channel Communications, you know, he said in 2003 He said, we're not in the business of providing news and information. When he's talking about we, he's talking about his company, his corporation. We're not in the business of providing news and information. We're not in the business of providing well-researched music. We're simply in the business of selling our customers' products. Boom. There you go. But at the same time, meanwhile, we have groups, as I said, Dead Prez, you know, as you know, Dead Prez, you know, has lyrics out now. They say, you know, to quote, you know, M1, they immobilized the marches of the movement and imprisoned many people. This is a song. I'm sorry. This is a song called Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. He says, now they monitor the music, making martyrs out of you and me. The emblem is a panther, not a pimp, and my woman is an empress, if you ever get a glimpse. My impression of a moron is an empty-minded man. Think about that. Listen, that spits into the face of that other bull crap that's being put out there. He's, you know, embracing, you know, women, you know what I'm saying, not as objects of sexual gratification, but saying, you know, she's an empress, and my emblem is a panther, not a pimp, so I would reject, you know what I'm saying, you know, yeah, you know, anyone trying to call me a pimp, you know, I'm a pimp, you know, my emblem is a panther, not a pimp. That's the emblem that I roll with, not being a pimp. And, you know, they monitor the music, making martyrs out of you and me. They immobilize the marchers of the movement and imprison many people. I mean, come on, you know. So, you know, we have songs like that, you know, which is, you know, called Malcolm Garvey Huey. Matter of fact, you know what? Let me just play a little sample of that, you know, because I need to get that that musical bowel movement out of my freaking head, man, which is was just provided by Trinidad James. You know, thanks a lot. Yeah. Anyways, I guess I'm somewhat of a sadomasochist, man, to play that. But so, for instance, let me play a song. Couple songs in the Dead Prez. This is Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Song came out in 2010. Suppressed. At this juncture, I guess me saying it's suppressed is being a bit redundant. You should know by now. Suppressed.
Malcolm Garvey Huey, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. His life is like a movie, study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, Malcolm Garvey Huey. His life is like a movie. I die, I organize. Everything I do's revolutionized. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these, really think you should. I study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, Marcia Cody with the Uzi, listening to Fela Kuti. I'm a goon with the machete, especially if it's jelly. Got the Santos for the Hexy to protect me, so respect me. This is heavy, legendary, revolutionary. My wifey, she resurrect me when they thought they had me buried. Took me out the cemetery, now it's family over every. Cause that's all that's necessary to avoid the commissary. I'ma live for you five, so I stop getting high. If you know, then you recognize it's that black and brown pride. It's the power of the mind. RPG, God divine. You can see through the lies if you can read between the lines. I live, I die, I organize. Everything I do, revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these, really get you sure. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Malcolm Garvey Huey, Bungie Bobby, Pac and Tookie. Sitting by the door, so you can say I'm acting spooky. Just like in the movie, son, you better pack your toolie. Niggas squish be acting fruity, you'll be cracking like they pookie. Rather smoke a doobie than be burning and eluding. Bang, bang, pig shooting, we should blame Rudy Julie. Yanny for the camera, shine white and nose candy. Let you banging on the system, you a gangster wearing panties. RBG, my family, from the Bronx to Miami. Police cannot stand me, Pacquiao like a Manny. Call me Little Bobby Hutton, cause I'm first to push the button. Rappers don't be saying nothing to the system, we say fuck them. This is for Nahana, Mama C, Mama Akua. All the real OGs, I'm a soldier, cause you told me study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
And I made a mistake before. The quote from the song from Dead Prez that I said before, that actually comes from another Dead Prez song called Game is a Battlefield. I got all these lyrics running around in my head. That's from a song called Game is a Battlefield. But that song right there, that was Malcolm Garvey Huey. And here's the song called Game is a Battlefield, and I was going to play, you know, a minute or so of this as well. These songs are all, you can all find them on YouTube. Support the artists. I would say support the artists. I mean, these artists, they're not being, you know, exposed to the masses, so, you know, find a way to support these artists, you know, and, you know, go to their websites, find out how you can support them, purchase their music, if you can, at the very least, expose these, you know, this music to young people, as well as to older people as well, who might be into hip-hop or not into hip-hop. Let them know, educate them to what hip-hop is, and to what is being suppressed by this corporate media. So here is Game is a Battlefield by Dead Prez.
This is a mockery of your number one station that's brainwashing the nation. Playing the same old stereotypical musical as usual. With no balance or substance, cause you motherfuckers love it. They scared of real hip-hop, like the threat of war. The game is a battlefield, but it's not a metaphor, it's real life. You get drafted by the A&Rs, you get sworn in and join in to play your part. Like a soldier, with no choice, you are what they say you are. They use your voice to wage a war. They send you across lands and over airways. The video program is like an air raid. Women and children in the line of fire. Today rappers is like mercenaries. Soldiers for hire, dog tags and gold chains. Slugs is rap, killing brown and black. Like campaigns in Iraq, minefields in the whack. If it don't blow up, you get a bayonet in your back. Back on the block like a vet in the wheelchair. No health care, the same way the rap game did the first pioneers. It's a battlefield. It's a takeover, not a makeover.
The word is the bullet. Peter Tosh had an AK for a guitar. I'm Chay, but my pen is my cigar. Urban Gorilla Griot, other side of the peephole. It's a war outside. I say Fleo, Leo, Smeo, is it real? Audio terror, this ain't a drill. Now your helmet is a new era. Fashionista army apparel. Gun barrel, radio waves. Rapid return fire. Street call desire. It's the fall of the empire. Download your freedom using hi-fi, Wi-Fi, 5 verse 5. It's the media lie. Identify yourself, soldier. We ain't making classics no more. We getting over. Keep looking over your shoulder. Study the terrain. See, they watching the internet. They're studying your brain. And politics is war without guns. I said it before. Now they turn the battlefield into a dance. Floor, and it's hard to the core if you start to explore. It's hard to the core if you start to explore.
So that was Dead Prez. Game is a Battlefield. There's more to that song as well. Just, you know, in the interest of time, just playing some samples here and there to give you a little bit of a, you know, deeper insight. So I said before that we need to embrace alternative mediums. We need to embrace looking at alternative methods of getting news and information out there. And, you know, news and information comes by way of music as well. I mean, music plays a major role in movements as well as revolutions and so forth. So, you know, music has played a major role in inspiring people to become activists, to become humanitarians, to be inspired to step outside the proverbial boxes that they've been kept inside, you know. So music is really important, you know. And so whether it's, you know, folks having community podcasts or trying to pool their resources together to create a truly independent, and I would say, you know, I think it's vastly important, independent media that is controlled by people of color. That is controlled, not ultimately controlled by other folks. I think it's vastly important that people of color control their own mediums, and that comes with, you know, with controlling and owning, you know what I'm saying, whether it's community radio or so forth. I think it's vastly, vastly important. You know, just like I would say that it would be vastly important as a man, I think it's vastly important for women, you know what I'm saying, especially revolutionary-minded women, you know, to progressive women, to control, own and control their own, you know, own radio stations and media. So, you know, I don't have a lot of economic wherewithal, so, you know, I decided to start a podcast and to start Your World News, you know, several years ago. And you know, it's grown to be what it is, and it continues to grow, but it's certainly not terrestrial radio, but it plays a role. It plays a role. Podcast, you know what I'm saying, podcasts do play a role. You know, people creating, you know, handouts and flyers and leaflets in their community, that plays a role, you know what I'm saying? So we can't just sit on our hands and say, oh, you know, let's just wait till we get a hold of a terrestrial radio station. In that process, as we're building to control and own our own terrestrial radio stations and even building our own papers and so forth, we need to embrace and support those papers that are progressive, that are out now. You know, whether it's you know, whether it's the Burning Spear or the Final Call or what have you, support those and build your own as well. You know what I'm saying? You know, there's far too much information that's being suppressed, and so we can't look at this as a competition thing. If you're into activism and you're looking at people that are doing the same thing you're doing, and you see them as competition, you're not an activist. You're a freaking capitalist. You're a freaking capitalist. You need to look at people that are doing similar things, that are on track and have similar missions that you have as comrades, as allies, as people that you can collaborate with to build and to expand the range of information and organization that we have out there. Because we're battling, you know, the corporate entities that have almost unlimited resources. So we have to look at that. So diversify. So if it's not terrestrial radio, then look at that podcast. You know, get a hold of your camera phones and the flip cams and go out there and record, you know, the voices of people that are in your communities that are being suppressed, the voices that can talk about the impact of gentrification on them and their communities and their families and their households. You know, we got to get that out there, you know, and in the meantime, if you're going to play music, play that revolutionary kind of music, like the Dead Prez and World Techniques, like I was just highlighting, you know, play that there, you know, this is what it's about, you know, this is what it's about. We have to be consistent, because when we look at ownership of radio, if you put together all of the radio stations in America, black people own less than 3.5% of all radio stations in America. You put together all people of color together own less than 8% of all the radio stations out there. So minimally 92% of all radio stations in America are being controlled by white people. You know what I'm saying? And so if I owned, you know, that's why I was saying before that women should own their own. I mean, I can't, you know, even though I may be anti-sexist, anti-misogynistic, no one can speak about these kind of women's issues like women can. Yes, men play a major role because only men need to, you know, can stop, you know, sexual abuse and rape and those things by not putting their hands on women in the first place. And we play a vastly important role as men to educate other men and to push and to challenge other men to stop it. Stop it. You know what I'm saying? Stop it. You know, don't you ever put your hand on a woman without her consent, you know. But women have a particular insight that only women can encapsulate. So the day-to-day trials and tribulations that women go through living in a male-dominated, male supremacist society, that's why they should, you know, ultimately would have to control their own means of communication, you know, in terms of getting these messages and information out there. Same goes for people of color. We need to have broader control over the means of communication within our communities. And so if It's not going to be the corporate media that's not going to allow us to do that, which they're not. Then we need to be going on a grassroots campaign within our communities to push for community-controlled media, okay? Television is no different. 0.6% of all full-power broadcast television stations in America are owned by black people. And when you put all people of color together, less than 4% of all full-power broadcast television stations are owned by people of color. So as we move towards an end of this, and this is just a snapshot that just, you know, I mean, there's so much more to delve into, so much more to delve into. But, you know, when we look at these images of these progressive rappers that I was telling you about, these progressive MCs, better yet, they're MCs, the Dead Prezes, the Stickman, the M1s, the Mortal Techniques, you know, these progressive revolutionary MCs, why are they so discomforting to the so-called mainstream America? Well, they're discomforting to them because these images and these MCs, these young men and women, they spit in the face of the stereotypical image that is right now presently being massively promoted by corporate media, white corporate media, you know what I'm saying, and a couple, you know, corporate media out there that is black owned that have no problem, you know, expanding their bottom dollar, their bottom line at the expense of their own people, but the vast majority of it is owned by white people who don't have the vested interest of the, you know, the liberation and the ending of institutional racism and so forth. They don't have that black people's best interest at heart, and that's why they actively suppress, you know, the messages that are coming from the voices of Dead Prez and so many others. And like, as I said before, you know, you can email me at solo, S-O-L-O, at yourworldnews.org. That's S-O-L-O at yourworldnews.org. I can send you tons of information if you want to know, you know, some, have a laundry list of MCs and hip-hop artists that to start with, you know, that if you're not like an avid hip-hop fan, if you'd like to, you know, be introduced to some really progressive hip-hop art, I can send you that. I can, you know, so I have a reading list, a media reading list I can send you, no problem whatsoever. You know, you can just, you know, cut and paste it or attach it to an email and just send it off to you. So, anyway, and all, a lot of that stuff is posted on my website as well, you know, or you can go to yourworldnews.org. That's www.yourworldnews.org. But as we continue to close, you know, this session, you know, I just want folks to understand that it is, as they say, you know, Dead Prez, you know, someone said it's bigger than hip hop. It really is. It's bigger than hip hop. We must get back in the practice of controlling our own images of ourselves, our own messages. We must get back in the business of that, because right now hip hop, you know, the vast majority of hip hop that is out there, that is broadly being, you know, broadcast, is not being controlled by people who look like the rappers that they're highlighting, that they're selectively highlighting. It's not being controlled by those communities. It's being controlled by white corporate executives, mostly white males, that couldn't give a damn how public policy has a deleterious impact, how these images lead towards public policy and lead towards the hyper-policing and police brutality that can be caused by these images. They don't give a damn about the ramifications of these, you know, on the mental the psyche and the overall consciousness of black and brown youth, you know, who may just misguidedly just, you know, naively embrace these messages, these images that are being put out there. They don't give a damn. And so those of us that are in the know, that are from these communities, it's important for us to do to each one, teach a dozen or more, to start to educate not just kids, but also some parents, because we know some parents in our communities are not privy to this information. So they don't necessarily see how deleterious, how dangerous it is to allow their children to be exposed to music, you know, this kind of music in their home and so forth, without first training these young people to deconstruct these images. Because once you train a young person, you know, how to think, not what to think, but how to think, how to effectively think and how to critically think, and exposing them to the brilliance of their history, of the law, you know, the how they come from kings and queens, you know, and revolutionaries and liberators, and you expose them to that. When they are exposed, if they're educated in that manner, when they are exposed to the likes of Trinidad James or the coonery of the Two Chains or whoever, you can pick any one of several artists that are broadcast over the corporate media. When they're exposed to that, they'll reject it. That's not me. If you they know who they are, if they're educated and know who they are and the brilliance of their history, they'll reject it. They will reject it. That is not me. Look at that clown. That's not me. And we know that more and more, you know, black youth are not really interested in a lot of these artists. But there's a lot that still are. There is a lot that still are. Yes, there are studies that show that more and more black youth, you know, are starting to reject these images. But we know that there's a lot, you know. Trust me, you know, I spend a great deal of time, you know, in the inner city, and I know, he was saying, there are far too many that do embrace these images and these messages. I do work in juvenile detention centers, and there are, you know, far too many that do embrace these, and that's why, you know, I take every opportunity to work with them to deconstruct these messages, to see them for what they are, which is stereotypical, racist, you know, images that are being fed to them by folks outside their community that couldn't give a damn about them. We got to keep pushing forward. We got to keep doing this kind of work. And so, as I said before, my website, if you want to visit my website for more on my work, it's www.solomoncomissing.com. This has been the often untold history of hip-hop culture. So we've traversed a long way. We've gone all the way back to ancient Kemet, all the way to the Black Power movement, to present day rapsploitation, exploitation of black and brown, you know, originated culture and medium, which is hip hop culture, you know, to putting the onus on ourselves to share this information. To share it broadly. There's no shortage of songs. I mean, I could have been, this would have been a 10-hour show if I could have, you know, but there's so many songs that I could have played and highlighted, you know, songs like Ladies First. You know, if you have young women that you work with, play Ladies First by Queen Latifah and Moni Love. Matter of fact, play the video and have them watch the video and listen to the song. It's a very powerful music video. You know, go YouTube it. Ladies First by Queen Latifah and Moni Love. YouTube it. That's a powerful, powerful song. And look at how regal those women are portraying themselves and talking about the influence and the impact, the tremendous impact that women have had on the scope of building nations. You know, you can't build nations without strong women. You just can't. So much music could have been played. And so, where do we go? Well, you know what? I'm just going to take us out with Lupe Fiasco song. I think that would be very appropriate right now to end this particular show, and maybe we'll pick it up another time in the near future. But I'm going to end this show with a song by an artist by the name of Lupe Fiasco, comes out of Chicago. He has a great song also that deconstructs, misogyny and sexism called Bitch Bad. So B-I-T-C-H, bad, Bitch Bad. Please, if you haven't seen the video or heard the song, YouTube it. Watch the video. Powerful, powerful song. It's a play on words, and it's called Bitch Bad. You know, and when he says bad, he's talking about bitch bad as in bad, not good. You know, not definitely check out that song. But I'm going to play a song by Lupe Fiasco called All Black Everything. Great, great, great song. Great song. So here's Lupe. This is Salma Kamajan for Your World News. Signing off for this episode, The Often Untold History of Hip Hop Culture. We got to do it. One for all and all for one. You know, I could play that song too by Fran Nubian. I mean, so we got to do this together. We got to do this together, and look at each other as collaborators and not competition. We got to build together. This is Lupe Fiasco, All Black Everything. Peace.
Sometimes you just gotta go.
You never know who you could ever be. If you never try, you'll never see. Stay in Africa, ain't never leave. So the window's played, and I have to read. When a slave ship, when no misery. Call me crazy, or isn't he? See, I fell asleep, and I had a dream. It was all black, everything.
We ain't get exploited. White man ain't fear it, so he did not destroy it. We ain't work for free, see they had to employ it. Built it up together, so we equally appointed. First 400 years, see we actually enjoyed it. Constitution written by W.E.B. Du Bois. When no reconstruction, civil war got avoided. Little black Sambo grows up to be a lawyer. Extra, extra, on the newsstand. Black woman voted head of Ku Klux Klan. Malcolm Little died as an old man. Martin Luther King read the eulogy for Ham. Followed by Bill O'Reilly, who read from the Koran. President Bush sends condolences from Iran. Where Fox News reports lie that Ahmadinejad died when Mandela Peace Prize.
You never know
who
you could ever be. If you never try, you'll never see. Stay in Africa, ain't never leave. So the window's played, and I have to read. When a slave ship, but no misery. Call me crazy, or isn't he? See, I fell asleep, and I had a dream. It was all black, everything.
And it ain't no project. Keeping it real's not an understood concept. Yeah, complexion's not a contest. Cause racism is no context. Hip hop ain't got a section called conscious. Everybody rapping like crack never happened. Crips never occurred, no blood to attack then. Matter of fact, no hood to attack in. Somalia's a great place to relax in. Fred Astaire was the first to do a backspin. The Rat Pack was a cool group of black men that inspired five white guys called the Jackson. Eminem fitting in, but then again, he inspired a black rapper trying to mimic him. And that's really Rosa out of Michigan, a sign of white rapper by the name of Peter Skin.
You never know who you could ever be. If you never try, you'll never see. Stay in Africa, ain't never leave. So the window's played, and I have to read. When a slave ship, when no misery. Call me crazy, or isn't he? See, I fell asleep, and I had a dream. It was all black, everything.
And I know this is a fantasy. I cordially invite you to ask, why can it be? Now we can't do nothing about the past, but we can do something about the future that we have. We can make it fast, or we can make it last. Every woman queen and every man a king. And when those color lines come, we can't see between. We just close our eyes till it's all black, everything.
You never know who you could ever be. If you never try, you'll